And a good Saturday morning to you. I am joined, as promised, from the University of Minnesota, Laura Irish Hansen. Laura, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Denny.
How are you? How has it been? Talked to you for a while.
It's been pretty hectic with all those seedlings. Remember I told you I started slowly migrating them out and hardening them off, and now I'm staring at the flats going, oh man, when do I have time to plant all of these?
But you love it, though. You still love it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'll make time. There's always time for the garden.
What a great job. Laura is going to be answering all of those questions either by phone or by text today, as usual. And we're already getting busy, Laura, which is not a surprise to you, I know. Call us or text us. You want to chat with Laura? Great. If you just want to send a text, either way, 651-461-9226. Well, what is on your agenda outside today, Laura?
Yeah, so I purchased two metal 17-inch raised beds. They're 2.5 by 9.5 feet, and so I assembled them with my husband, and now I'm going to actually layer them up and get them filled. So slowly converting some of my in-ground beds just to raised beds, mostly for mowing purposes, because my husband doesn't really love having to mow right up to the edge of my garden beds and then me going, don't hit my plants.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's it. I'd like to see some pictures of that. I've been thinking for years, telling our friend Julie and Mary that I've wanted to do something like that in our backyard instead of mowing. Well, I still have to mow, but that's great. That's kind of exciting.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
That's great. All right. I tell you what, we're already getting callers besides texters. Let's grab a couple before we move further. Lynn in Little Falls, I think, is first up here. Lynn, thank you. What is your question for Laura?
Hey, I don't have a question, but last year I had apple scab really bad on my trees that were the in the patio, and this was the ones that just supply for the birds. And this year they're full of blossoms, dark purple blossoms, where normally the crab apples blossoms are a light pink. This year they're really like a burgundy cranberry color, and the tree is just full of blossoms.
So it's positive. Good news.
Yep. Yeah, and sometimes plants that do have that flowering fruiting cycle, it's almost every other year you'll get a really big flush, lots of blooms, lots of fruit, and then the plant, you can think of it kind of like a rest year the next year. So you might just be on that natural cycle too. Or if the plants were too stressed out last year to really flower and fruit very well, this might be the year for them to flower prolifically and have some nice fruit for those birds mostly.
Thank you, Lynn. Boy, we're getting a ton of calls. Let's go to Stillwater, Minnesota. Sue is there. Thank you, Sue. What is your question?
I have a question on lily bugs, those little red things. How do you control them? I know they're kind of new. I went last year to the garden center near me, and they hadn't even heard of them. So what is the only thing picking them off, or is there some other way to keep them, because they just are decimating the Asiatic type lilies?
Yeah, I'm going to have to look those up, the red lily bug. So I'll do that during the break and see if there's anything other than hand picking. That's my first go-to, is a soapy bucket of water if you can try to hand pick them, but I'm pretty sure they're pretty quick. So let me get back to that one.
You can do a little homework during the break, and we'll get back, Sue. Laura will with some information, so keep listening. Alan, we're going to get back to the text. Alan is calling in from St. Paul this morning. Thank you, Alan. What is your question?
Thank you for taking the call. Happy gardening Saturday. Three questions. I've noticed in nurseries that they have a bamboo pole next to the tree leader to stabilize it. Is that something new, and when do you take that bamboo pole off of the tree to stabilize the leader? And the second one, what's your thoughts on bare root planting trees, or do you think it's better to have the dirt in trees when you plant them?
Awesome questions. So I'll start with the bamboo pole one. So that bamboo pole, they use those mostly to keep them upright. Also can help with handling if those pots happen to tip over, if there's wind. So you can leave those for a couple of years. The key is with those poles, if there is a tie around them, around the tree, you want to make sure it's actually kind of loose. So there should be some sag there. And you don't never want to tie really tight against the tree because you can actually end up girdling it. So think of putting like a rubber band wrapped around your finger. You know, you start losing circulation, especially if you're outside, right? And your fingers kind of swell up. So that can happen to the trees, and then it can kill them. So if there are ties on them, make sure that those are loose, because you still want the trees to move a little bit with the wind. It'll help them grow a lot stronger. Generally, you don't have to keep them up with the trees for more than like a year or so. Not really, unless you have a super windy site. And then if you do have a super windy or rough site, I recommend guying, just like how it sounds, guying the trees. And we have a great webpage that explains how to do that on extension.umn.edu. So for your second question, we also have a really great webpage about planting trees and shrubs, and there's information on bare root planting. Now, bare root are great. They're generally cheaper than container grown, but bare root plants are generally only available, not just, but usually we see them mostly in the spring months, because these are trees and shrubs that are dormant, so they're not actively growing, and then they there's a whole fun process for how they're grown, actually, and then they're shipped, so it's cheaper because they're not having to ship all that soil with those trees. So it's a really great way, particularly if you have to plant quite a few trees or shrubs, or that's what you're hoping to do, is to be able to get them bare root early in the season. Bare root trees transplant just fine. I actually just got to help participate in some bare root tree planting around South Minneapolis in some of the parks the last few weeks. And we do that quite successfully with good tree survival, as long as the plants are not buried too deep. That's one of the biggest issues we see, are that the root flares, so where the stem and the roots meet, you generally will see those like main first roots. You want to make sure that's at the soil level. So bare root, perfectly fine. Just don't bury your trees too deep.
Very good. I want to take, Laura, one more phone call, and then we'll take a break, and we'll get to the text questions. So Larry is next up here calling from Morristown. Larry, thank you for waiting. What is your question?
When a rhubarb turns to seed, can you take that seed pod and somehow dry it out and replant it to produce rhubarb plants in the future?
Yeah, great question. So yeah, if you do let your rhubarb flower and go to seed, you can germinate a rhubarb seed. They do sometimes have a pretty hard seed coat, so you can try to just kind of nick them with a knife very gently. And then you can start them. They take a while to actually grow to a good size that will survive. The best thing to do is actually just divide your rhubarb. So if your patch has slowly gotten bigger over time, be aggressive, take a shovel, dig up that patch, and you can chop those rhubarb, depending on how big the crown is, into 2, 3, 4 pieces and spread your rhubarb that way.
Very good. Okay, Laura, we're going to take a quick break here. You can do a little research on the lily beetle, and when we come back, we'll pick up on more text questions here. 651-461-9226. This is Smart Garden from News Talk 830 WCCO. And good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to this edition of our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long back with Laura Irish Hansen from the U of M answering those lawn and garden questions, and we have many. Now, did you do a little research, Laura?
I did. And so the lily leaf beetle, there is a general information about them on our Minnesota Department of Ag website. So you can check there just so you can see images of what this looks like in the eggs and larvae. There isn't control information on our site, but everything I looked up from other reputable sources pretty much just say it's manual control. So that means flicking them off into like a bucket of soapy water, removing the eggs where you can. And because they do overwinter in the soil, it's pretty difficult to control them once they're in the soil.
couple of questions about critters eating leaves. Is there something on the website somebody could refer to, you could refer them to, as far as critters?
Yeah, so we do actually have quite a few web pages on wildlife in the garden. And a lot of it that we talk about is mostly protecting plants in the winter. But those same practices apply all growing season. Your best defense for most mammals or larger critters is going to be a fence or some type of cage to protect those high value plants. If you're having issues, say with mice or ground squirrels, something that's smaller, definitely make sure you're using hardware cloth instead of chicken wire, because chicken wire has pretty big holes. And so those smaller critters can get in there. You also want to think about removing nesting sites. So where a lot of these critters, they want to be in a protected space. So if you have ornamental grasses or lots of last year's growth that's kind of fallen down into the garden, that can be really inviting, welcoming spaces for those animals to nest. So sometimes you might want to just clean up a little bit around those high value or really desirable plants that those critters want to eat.
I think there's a lot of variables, but the texture is referring to the big holes. Something is eating in the leaves, of salvia leaves. Big holes.
Oh, like
in them.
An insect.
Yeah.
So check the underside of the leaves. That would be my first thing. So some of these, usually they're like a caterpillar. There's some type of larvae that's on the leaf that's chewing around. And so check the underside of the leaves. That would help you kind of identify what insect there is. So we do have quite a few pages and information on the most common insects that we see in Minnesota gardens. So check out our extension.umn.edu.
Yeah, it's a great resource. Texter wants to know, can I transplant rhubarb, which would be a portion of the original plant?
Absolutely. And I highly encourage people do that. I've only been in my house now. This is our fourth growing season, and I've already had to divide my rhubarb twice because it's so prolific. Definitely chop them up, transplant them, move them around.
The pollinators don't want this question answered, but the best way to kill dandelions, Texter wants to know.
Yeah, dandelions are pretty tricky because they're really fast. It's 1 minute they're just the leaves and basal growth, and then all of a sudden there's a yellow flower, and the next day it's already gone to seed. So the best thing you can do, you can try to control it depending on where it is. If it's in your lawn space, of course you can treat your lawn for broadleaf weeds. But the weed seed bank for dandelions is pretty high, right? They produce a lot of seeds per flower, and so you're likely going to continue to see them pop up throughout the growing season. They have a very long tap root, so they have a very strong central root, and you want to get as much of that root up as possible if you are going to be digging them out of a garden bed, say, or if you want to dig them out of your lawn. So you want to make sure that you have a nice, sharp, long tool to get down there and get as much as the root as possible, because if you break any part of the root, and particularly in those first like 4 inches of the soil, they will quickly regrow, and they actually branch, usually make multiple stems, and it's much harder to control that with manual removal.
Yeah,
but just keep at it.
I think I still have for years one of these things you step on, and I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, those little claw things, right? The metal
tines
kind of go down.
Yeah,
those are pretty helpful.
Yeah.
It's much easier when the ground is moist. So if,
for sure.
You know, some of us are going to hopefully get some rain. Yeah. Do it after it rains. Much, much easier.
Which it will tomorrow. We'll talk about the forecast coming along. It should be a rainy Sunday tomorrow. This texter, Laura, has two different Asian lilies. Pots one has three stalks. The other one has two. Do I separate those when I plant them, but they all go together?
I would, depends on how vigorous the pot with three looks. If it doesn't look super vigorous, and by that I mean really nice growth, it doesn't look kind of like limp and leggy. If it's vigorous, you could try to separate them, but what I want you to do is put your fingers down, get below the soil, and feel if those are actually separate plants, or if they are separated by, you know, like half an inch to an inch from where each one of those stems are coming out, because that is more... it's more likely to survive if you decide to divide it. if it isn't super vigorous, I would hold off this year. Plant them where you want to put them, let them grow maybe for a year, 2-3 years, get a little larger, and then divide them.
Very good. Texter says this, lily of the valley are overtaking the garden when using a systemic. Might it leach over to other plants?
So you want to make sure that you are just controlling with that systemic and touching the lily of the valley leaves. So lily of the valley does spread by rhizomes. They're actually called pips, P-I-P-S. And so that's a pretty extensive network, and it's kind of forms a mat where they are. So it depends on if they're growing next to like newer plants. If you put in some newer plants this spring, you know, that aren't as they're not as established. You want to make sure you're really careful with that systemic because you could potentially damage those new plants. So as long as you're really careful and maybe you're using a paintbrush or something for that application, you should be okay. But for everyone listening, if you're using any type of pesticide, the label is the law. So make sure that you are reading the instructions.
Always. Yeah. Listen to us in Hawaii, in their case, such an outbreak of clover in the lawns this year.
So I wish John was here. He would have a really great explanation. So he explained to me, because I asked that for my own lawn, a clover can be a sign or an indicator that there is not enough nitrogen available for the turf to grow really well. And because clover fixes its own nitrogen, it can outcompete that turf area. So it's a pretty good indicator that maybe you need to increase your nitrogen fertilization for your turf area.
Very interesting. Good morning, Tester says. I once had a nice green lawn, but over the past few years, it has thinned out. They sent a picture, but we can't get pictures on our text, unfortunately. The lawn gets more shade than sun. What can I do to restore the lawn? Yeah, I wish John was here, too. What would you suggest, Laura?
Yeah, so it can be really tricky, particularly if you're growing turf under a large shade tree, right? Trees, depending on the type of tree, some trees have really shallow, extensive root systems, so think like maples. And when we've been going through these multiple summers with really long periods between rain events, that drought is really stressful for those plants, particularly in the spring and the fall. So I would recommend buying a mixture of turf specifically for shade. That can be really, really helpful. So, I would look for a shade tolerant to overseed.
And our garden centers have some great quality seed, too, because that makes a big difference, doesn't it? Quality
seed. Oh, for sure. And John actually co-wrote an amazing page all about purchasing turf grass seed in Minnesota. So definitely check that webpage out.
extension.umn.edu. Very good. Laura, we're going to take a break, have a look at that forecast, be right back with more of our Smart Garden Show here on News Talk 830. This is WCCO. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show. If you're just joining us from the U of M, Laura Irish Hansen answering those questions this morning. And Laura, we always do like to talk about the Arboretum. So many things going on there. This time of year is no exception. It's been kind of busy there lately, but for good reason, right?
Oh, super busy. The tulips are, they're still blooming. I was just at the Arboretum on Thursday, and I drove 3 mile drive many times, because I was circling around, but the tulips were still gorgeous because they plant those early, mid, and later blooming tulips. Definitely something to go check out. But what's really fun starting today, they have the May markets. And so that's for the next 3 weeks. So this week and the following two, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday, you can go and just look around and get all these really cool arts, crafts, foods. There's live music. It's really a fun thing to just kind of peruse around while you're enjoying the gardens.
Yeah, just a great place. 651-461-9226 for any kind of a lawn or garden question you have for Laura. This texter says this. They live in St. Anthony, not far. There's a forecast this week, I think it may be midweek, of an overnight low of 41 degrees. They're concerned that my peppers and tomatoes are going in today. If I cover them with buckets, should the buckets go to the ground or should I prop them up for air?
So what you want to do, this is really great for anybody who maybe was really eager and got their warm season plants like peppers and tomatoes out already or doing it this weekend. When we do have temperatures that are dipping below, well, getting pretty close to 40, that can damage some of those plants depending on what they are. And so you want to cover them at night. So you can put those buckets on later. You don't want to cover the plants when the sun is going to hit those buckets because, right, that could get really hot. So keep them covered. And then mid-morning, the next morning, remove those buckets because the coldest time of the day is generally right around sunrise. So we don't want to go out immediately during the coldest part of the day to remove those covers. We want to wait a little bit, like a couple hours at least until temperatures come back up. But we don't want to leave those buckets on permanently.
Very good.
I'm going to be covering mine with sheets, old sheets that had holes in them, just to kind of help conserve some of that warmth.
Sure. Listeners sent this text in, Laura. My raspberry is 40-plus years old. In the last 2 to 3 years, it had stopped growing except for small plants coming up. I'd like to get rid of the bed, but the roots seem impregnated. Any advice?
Yeah, raspberries are really... they're good at surviving. So if you are just going to, you want to use manual control methods, that means you're going to be digging and you might have to dig, you know, 5-10 feet away from that initial raspberry bed because it's going to throw rhizomes across and underneath and start growing. So it's a lot of, it's a labor of love if you don't want to use an herbicide.
Once in a while, as you know, Laura, we get requests to talk about and or promote various plant sales, different counties around the state. What would you suggest if somebody wants to find out what you know, which county is having which sale?
Yeah,
so, online somewhere.
Yeah, there are a lot of really great master gardener groups in all the counties and. In Minnesota, and a lot of them have plant sales. And so these are a group of amazing, knowledgeable volunteers who are either growing plants and selling them or getting in plants wholesale and selling them that work well for your particular areas. So you can just look up most of the Master Gardener groups. You can look up their events online. So you can just do your county name, Master Gardener, or you can do plant sales near me. And that should help direct you to all the wonderful various sales that are going on.
And a good day for it, too. Great. Good morning. Texter says, when can I move my overwintered mandevilla plant back outside? It has lots of vines and leaves, but how do I get the flowers to grow?
Yeah, so we want to make sure mandevilla does not like getting cool. So I would wait until nighttime temperatures are consistently above 50 degrees. So like someone texted earlier, at least in the Twin Cities area and, of course, further north, it's going to get pretty chilly midweek in the low 40s and sometimes into the 30s. So we don't want to be putting out those tropical plants yet. So hold off for another week or two. Closer to Memorial Day, if you're in the southern half of the state, is really a sure bet that it's a good time to be putting those, or it's a safe time to put those plants out. To get them to flower, you don't want to over-fertilize them because too much nitrogen can actually decrease the amount of blooms you see. So if you are looking for those to flower, you want to look for something that has a little bit more phosphorus if it's in a potted plant.
Okay. Any advice Texter wants to know on getting rid of creeping bellflower?
Yeah, so creeping bellflower is a really aggressive little plant, and so it spreads mostly by little rhizomes. So it goes and it creeps underground, just right at or underground, and it can throw up new plants. It can also spread by seed, and so most of it you are going to need to do is digging. It's manual. You're going to want to try to dig up and get as much of the underground parts as possible. Now, when you do this, if you have a yard waste container or you have a yard waste pickup at your home, you want to call and make sure that the facility it goes to can accept aggressive weeds or invasive weeds. Before you put it in there. If you do not have access to a facility that can take those types of plants, what you can do is collect all those plant parts in a plastic bag, tie up that bag or zip it, you know, close it up, and then put it in a sunny, hot location for a couple of weeks to cook that plant material down before it can be safely composted.
Before we get back to the phones, let me grab one more text. 2 years ago, texter says, I planted two new peonies, one bare root and the other from a pot. Both plants look bushy and healthy, but have no buds. How do I get them to bloom?
Yeah, peonies are a little finicky. Sometimes it depends on what the cultivar is. It might just take a couple years or 2-3 years to actually pretty much you can think of it like settling in, getting enough energy and nutrients to push a flower bud. But one of the things we most commonly see that prevents peonies or inhibits them from flowering is that they were buried too deep. Peony roots actually want to keep them about an inch from the soil level or right at soil level, depending on the type of soil you have. So make sure you're not burying, it's not buried too deep. It's not under a bunch of mulch. Pull that mulch away from where those peony roots are. So just gently, yeah, just pull it away. And also stress, because they're new, you want to make sure that you've been watering them pretty consistently to get them established.
Very good. Laura, let's grab a phone call. Catherine checking in from Blaine today. Catherine, what is your question for Laura?
Thank you so much, Laura, for taking my call. Laura, I bought some hydrangeas, and they looked pretty sad. They were very, very cheap. So I bought them and I brought them home and I thought for sure they would come back. And the leaves are green, but the flowers are dying. What can I do, or is there anything I can do? How do I know when the plant is dead?
Yeah. So there are different types of hydrangeas. And so we have a webpage that actually explains how to identify the different types. So on extension.umn.edu, you can just type in hydrangeas and you'll see that page. So first thing you want to do is identify what type you have. And then once you know what type you have, it'll help you to determine when you're going to prune those plants or not. Now, if you purchase them this spring, I'm going to assume they're in like a 1 gallon size pot or maybe a little larger. If they were pretty lush and they already had blooms, those blooms are probably going to fade. Container growing those hydrangeas can be really stressful, particularly if they weren't watered consistently while they were either at the garden center or once you got them home. So you can just remove those flower buds and then you can pot those, put those plants into the ground. And then depending on the type you have, you can wait until next year and see what comes up, how they bloom for next year. So this year you might not see any more blooms, but you might have them next year. They're pretty resilient plants.
Laura, we talk about the website a lot, and I had mentioned this before you got on the air this morning about those brief videos. Neat idea that you put together. Tell us, for those that don't know what I'm talking about, explain what you've put together.
Yeah, so last year I made a whole bunch of videos called Hort Shorts. They're on our Yard and Garden YouTube channel. And so they're usually 30 seconds to a minute long. Some of them are a little longer. Just things that are going on in the garden. And so I'm hoping to get those started back up this coming week. Just mostly it's just me trying to help people with the common things that I see going on right now, especially in the southern half of Minnesota. Relevant ones include trimming back the spent flower buds from your tulips or spring flowering bulbs, because we don't want those bulbs to be putting energy into creating seeds. And so I just show people how to do that. Simple thing to do, but videos can be really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great. They're great videos. I'll tell you what, let's do. Let's take a quick break and be right back. And more questions to get answered here, either by phone or by text, on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. And welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show. If you are just joining us, Laura Irish Hansen from the U of M is answering all those lawn and garden questions. Laura, we still have a bunch. Here is one. I cut down an apple tree a couple of years ago. Suckers keep growing up in the yard around the stump. I cut them off, but they're prolific. How can I stop this?
Yeah, so a lot of those apple trees are really, really good at regrowing once the main tree is gone. Because for everyone who wants to be nerdy with me for a second, it's something called breaking apical dominance. So apical dominance usually is why we have like one main stem coming out for a lot of our trees. And once we cut that main tree off, it helps push the plants can actually push more energy into growing side shoots. So that's what you see coming up from the root system from that old apple tree. So you can continually try to cut those. Want to get them really early, right away. That can help slowly deplete it. But something you can do is actually treat the stump itself with a systemic herbicide so that it actually ends up going through and killing off more of those root systems so you don't see those shoots coming up in the middle of the yard or maybe moving out towards your house or the neighbor's yard because some of them have very extensive root systems.
I was looking at that forecast, and I think at midweek we have an overnight low of about 41, which would be the coldest of temp of this coming week. When can we get those tomatoes planted? When do you think?
I am waiting. So I am not putting out my peppers in particular until next weekend. I always wait, even in the Twin Cities area, until closer to Memorial Day, just because I don't like to have to cover plants, uncover plants, bring them in, bring them out. I find that very tedious. If you did already plant those tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, and it is going to be getting quite chilly, you can cover them to help kind of conserve that warmth overnight and into the next morning. So holding off is your best bet to be on the safe side. I'm not going to say I'm a lazy gardener, but I'm a pretty lazy gardener. So
you're just being careful. That's all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 I'll rebrand it.
There you go. A listener wants to know, why does my fiddle leaf fig plant have sappy-like blobs on the leaves, and what is it?
Oh, that sounds like honeydew to me. And so that can be caused by a couple of different insects. The first one I'm going to think of is called scale. So check on the, you know, fiddleleaf figs have big leaves and they have these big, strong veins. Check on the veins to see if there are little raised bumps. If there are little tannish to brown colored raised bumps, you might have something called scale. And that is an insect that has a piercing, sucking mouth part that will go in and it then also releases a kind of a sticky honeydew sap. And so if you do have scale, you can try to manually remove it. If you have a very large fiddle leaf fig, this can be quite tedious and you might have to continually do that. Scale also can survive on the pot and the tray and it could be on the table or wherever you have that or on the ground. So you want to make sure that you're checking everything and removing all that scale.
Okay. This listener via text wants to put raised vegetable beds in my lawn, but I irrigate using water from a stormwater settling pond. I am concerned about contaminants. Would appreciate your thoughts.
Yeah, so you want to make sure you're really careful on the water source you're using for edible foods, just because, like the texture has suggested, you know, for food safety reasons. So if you can use potable water, that would be preferred just for food safety aspects. If you're growing things, just to be on the safe side, I would not recommend doing that. You can, if you're not growing like root veg or something, you know, and that irrigation is just going onto the soil, you might be okay, but depends on what that water quality is from that catchment or basin.
All right. This listener via text would like to cut back lilacs after they have finished blooming, but my wife read that cutting them across the top is bad for the plants. Can you explain the best way to trim back lilacs?
Yeah, so it depends on your objective. So you can actually cut them just like a hedge. So if you're looking for a more formal shape for your lilacs, right after they bloom, within 2 weeks, once the blooms are spent, you can go in and actually cut them back. And that's because lilacs form their flower bud for the following year, so next spring's over this summer. So you can do that. If you have a really overgrown hedge and you're just trying to slowly bring that hedge back down, you can take a third of the largest stems out completely. So go all the way to the ground and remove them. And then over a 3-year period, you can bring those shrubs back to a much smaller stature. And then you'll still have blooms over those 3 years.
All right. Texter says this, can I plant impatiens now or should I wait a week or so?
It depends on where you're at. If you are in the southern half of the state, you could try, you could plant those impatiens out. They should be okay if the temperatures get down to like 38 degrees. They should be okay. If you're really worried about it and they're in a really open exposed spot, you could cover them overnight.
Just judging our latitude here, the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, what do we consider? Are we still considered four or in some cases five, zone five?
Yeah, so we are. There's quite a few places inside the metro area that are in 5A. So it is a, and those zones are about the winter temperatures. And so we are warming up over winter. We know that across the state. And so in 2023, the new hardiness zone maps were released. And so make sure that you're checking that out. And that's really important to know for perennial plants in particular, because that's going to help you determine which ones can survive over winter. If you're in a really exposed site, though, in the Twin Cities, sometimes those zone five hardy plants may not do very well if they're exposed to our really cold temperatures, because we still do get really extremely cold lows in the winter time that can damage some of those zone five plants.
Yeah, we sure do. Lawn question from a listener. How do I get rid of quack grass?
Quack grass is a real tricky one. We do have a web page on extension.umn.edu on quack grass. I don't want to say this, and I'm going to say it anyway. It's very much a you can learn to love and live with it because it is extremely aggressive. And my understanding is it doesn't respond very well to some of our herbicides. But check out our webpage for more information on if you're trying to control it.
So quackgrass and crabgrass, two different things,
very
obviously.
Different.
Yeah.
Very, very different. Crabgrass, much easier to control. Quackgrass is not very easy to control.
I bet you're going to find more. In fact, I wanted to make mention that John and your colleagues have put together a great lawn information on the website as well, right?
Oh, yeah. They have John and them. They made something called the Lawn Care Calendar. And it is so helpful because it helps you to look at, okay, what time of year is the best time to fertilize? When is the best time to seed, direct seed or overseed? When should I put sod? All those turf-related questions are in a nice, compact page for you.
Excellent. A texter says this or asks this, can I grow vegetables in soil with added composted manure?
Yes. So you just want to make sure that that composted manure is fully mature. And that means that it's not still manure, because if you do have just manure added, it can actually burn those plants and particularly the burn the roots. And so as long as it's fully composted, you can mix that in. And I would not do more than a quarter or maybe up to a third of that as compost added into to that soil.
In our last minute and a half or so, Laura, the texter, I wanted to get this in before we ran out of time, heard the beginning of the show when you talked about your yard and your above-ground work that you're doing. They wanted you to keep in mind it's not television, it's radio. Would you describe what you're doing, what you're building there?
Yeah, so I sorry about that. So I ordered in their metal bed. So it's a modular bed. So there's little panels, you just screw them together. And so it's 2.5 feet wide by 9.5 feet long, each one of these beds that I've made. And what I'm going to do is I already have 2-foot by 10-foot long beds. I have 6 of them in my backyard. So I'm replacing 2 of them with these. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull the little, not functioning borders I currently have out of my beds, remove those pieces of wood. I'm going to put cardboard down, and then I'm going to set my metal beds on top of that. So the cardboard's going to go extend just a little further than the metal beds do. And then I'm going to actually, because I have so much leaves and I have so many perennial stems, I'm going to shred those up. I'm going to fill the beds a little over half without compressing them. And then I'm going to start adding in compost that I've made in my backyard and topsoil, mix that in and fill those beds up before I transplant.
I'm tired so just
it's
listening
a big
to
job.
That.
Yeah. Right. But it'll be Laura, fun. And it's only 2 of the 6. So.
Well, that's great, though. Enjoy that. Laura, thank you so much. Always fun to have you on the radio. And I know we'll talk soon.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Laura Irish-Hansen from the University of Minnesota.